Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
United Hour, your one-stop shop for all things Manchester United. I'm your host, Imran.
I'm Cole.
And I'm Jamie.
Right, welcome. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year, everybody. We are coming to you after the new Nottingham Forest game. And one thing I don't think we do at United Hour is give you a picture of where we are. So, you know, it's a work day for me, but I'm taking a bit of time to do this podcast. I'm just sat in my lounge, nice and comfy, ready to talk about Man United. Jamie, where are you today? Where can we find you?
In my spare room. This is set up as my office as well, but thankfully I'm off until the 4th. So
nice,
a bit of time.
Nice, nice professional place to do a podcast. And Colm, whereabouts are you? Where can we find you?
In the bath.
He's in the bath, ladies and gentlemen.
Basically, what happened was we agreed to do this podcast at a time, and I forgot that, and then I've had a joyous but very stressful day with my 18-month-year-old, and I got home and got her dispatched to her mother and thought, you know what, time for some me time, you know. And then Imran texted me about doing a podcast, and I was just topping up the bath full of bubbles and just thought, well, I can't waste a bath full of water.
No, and I mean, there are all the health and safety implications involved with, you know, electronics and bath, but we'll leave that aside. I'm sure you've got it all covered, but it's just the mental image that we need everyone to have, I think.
Well, the bubbles are covering my decency, so.
Oh, that's good. We are doing this on Zoom, but all the cameras are turned off. Unfortunately or unfortunately, we'll let the listener decide. So yeah, anyway, on to the football, and we beat Nottingham Forest yesterday 3-0. Our first 3-0 win in quite some time, a very comfortable win. Although I swear at times in the second half we were trying to make it about as uncomfortable as we could for ourselves, but Nottingham Forest refused to accept the gift that we were giving, the Christmas gift that we were trying to get them into the game, and they just didn't want to. So in the end, 3-0, nice and comfortable. Colm, we'll start with you in the bath. What was your big takeaways from the game?
I was really glad that the Premier League's back. I enjoyed the World Cup, but not a fraction of the amount that you enjoyed the World Cup, Imran. I don't think I've ever yet met someone more buzzed about international football, and particularly an English fan. So I know that was probably crushing, but just your general joy at every part of the World Cup process was like the wonderment of a child, which was nice to see. I didn't really share it, so I was kind of like keeping an eye, watching quite a lot of games, but I just want the Premier League to come back, so I'm delighted that United are back and playing football. I was so ready and so excited to watch United play and be probably very disappointed at what we turned out. And actually, I was really pleased. Oh, I didn't have to be disappointed at all, really, because we were really good. Nottingham Forest were really bad. In terms of a re-entry to Premier League football, you really couldn't ask for better games here, I don't think. But yeah, I thought we looked slick. I thought we looked like the Ronaldo hangover was gone. I just thought it was an eminently comfortable, easy watch, to the point, Imran, where it was almost a bit boring.
I can see that. Jamie, same question to you, but also just throwing, how much would you read into this result considering Forest were quite terrible?
I thought the result was very good. I thought the performance was very good, in truth. A bit like Colm, very happy to see United back, but at the same time was a wee bit apprehensive as to certainly how we were going to start, just with it being so long since we've played, I know we played against Burnley last week in the League Cup, but this being the proper first game back in the Premier League, I was just a wee bit apprehensive. But even from the start, I thought it was just very comfortable, really. The only gripe I have at all with the game is it should have been three a lot sooner, and it actually should have been probably about four or five, just because we did play really well and made some really good chances. And I was very pleased with that. And I know what you mean. How much can you read into it? Because Forest aren't that great, really. And I know what you're saying about, like, you know, we kept kind of offering them chances, but even then, you know, they scored the VAR disallowed goal. Well, it was going wide anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's like Yates' header is going wide until it hits the guy who's standing offside. I don't know why they took so long to even confirm that. That should have been confirmed a lot sooner. The chances in the second half were kind of half chances, and we did let them kind of maraud forward a little bit, but I genuinely thought we were totally in control and we should have won by a lot more. Reading into it, I just think we do have players to come back. I know the likes of Varane and Bruno and Rashford and Martial were playing, but, you know, Luke Shaw playing at centre-half. Wan-Bissaka getting a run out, things like that. We've still got players to come back as well, so I just thought it was very encouraging for the players that did play, for some of the fringe players to get a run out, and just think we're actually going to get stronger from here with other guys, key players coming back in as well.
It was a makeshift back four. The rest of the team pretty much picks itself this point: Casemiro, Eriksen, Bruno, Anthony Martial and Rashford, who actually got to start together for the first time, I think it was, the first three, or definitely not started together too many times. But it was mainly at the back that everyone was a bit worried looking at the starting lineup. Colm, when you saw Shaw and Varane, were you worried, or you thought, nah, Luke Shaw's a super footballer and he'll do a job?
I was a little worried when I heard the reports. When I actually saw the team sheet, I was happy enough, because, you know, Wan-Bissaka is a bit of a nightmare, but he's solid enough. You know, you kind of know the kinds of mistakes that he's going to make, and I didn't think Nottingham Forest's front line with Jesse Lingard in it was going to be too difficult or pose those kind of questions that he would really suffer from. In terms of Luke Shaw, I mean, I play Luke Shaw at centre-back every day of the week, really, and particularly in a game where you're going to dominate the ball, I think it's even better. You know, I think, and I don't want to do a disservice to Lindelof here, but I think Luke Shaw is probably a better centre-back than Lindelof, and I appreciate I have a very small sample size to work off there, most of which he's played on a back three, but he was just top class yesterday. He did kind of play like a left centre-back of a back three, you know, rather than a pure centre-back, but like he was stepping in midfield, winning the ball, had the pitch, you know, quite dominant early. It just looked like Martinez was there, to be quite honest. So I think if it was another team, it could have been a big banana skin. But, like, I mean, Varane was top class. I mean, yeah. He probably still needs a week off, you know, as kind of Ten Hag said at the start, that it was a bit of a last kind of option to start him. And actually, Varane said, no, I'll step up and play kind of thing, because we don't really have anyone else, you know, showing his kind of leadership over Harry Maguire, I'd say. But no, I thought it was just, I wasn't too concerned as soon as the match started. You know, even when the disallowed goal went in, before it got disallowed, because I wasn't aware it was offside, I thought it was going to be given. I still wasn't really that bothered, because it just felt like if we had to, we would score more goals. And I think we were kind of letting them have chances because they weren't a threat, if you know what I mean. And it was just the players were just really comfortable, to be honest.
I think Luke Shaw, for me, if we put him anyway, he'd probably be in our two or three top position players in that position.
Yeah,
he is his touch and his feet,
you know. But like some of the passes, there was one he slipped Garnacho in, just with an absolute wreck of a ball along the floor that kind of split the defense, and Garnacho just couldn't quite get into it. But like his passing range was phenomenal. Lots of switches of play to Anthony and Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I just thought he looked really good there.
I thought his reading of the game was very good last night as well. As Colm said, there was times where he was stepping forward, and even if it was like a tactical foul on the halfway line, he's clever enough to do that, clever enough to step in when he needs to. Some of the passing was great. I was impressed with him, the centre-half, and while, yeah, if you're going to go up against the more physical team with a better number nine, that's not the way to go. But certainly in games like this, where you're going to dominate most of the ball, especially at home, against teams that maybe aren't going to be able to fashion too many chances other than set pieces, I'd be totally comfortable with him playing that role again.
I like to say he's a supreme footballer, and especially this season, he's just shown that when he's on and when he's bothered, there are a few better than him in our squad, and it shows. And a word on Varane as well. World Cup final literally last weekend.
Yeah.
Come back, raising a game for Forest at home. And, I mean, it's been a bit of a joke after the World Cup, like, who's going to be able to go back to play against Nottingham Forest after playing in the World Cup final? But he has done it, and the professionalism there, it's something to be admired, I think. I think there are players who'd be like, oh, I can't be asked for this shit. But
so I think he's top class. Him. I mean, I assume... Yeah. Martinez is still going to be like suffering the hangover of a lifetime in Argentina somewhere, but like Varane is just, particularly I thought the first 30 or 40 minutes when it actually was a bit of a game, really up until the 35th minute when we scored a second goal, he just won everything. But not just that, like he made it look easy, you know. It was like he was just mugging people off with the challenges and really kind of decisive about everything he was doing as well. And he's just, I mean, he stays fit, you know. Generally if our team stays fit, I think top four should be well within reach.
Yeah, well, we'll get to our what we think we're expecting for the second half of the season towards the end of the podcast. But so we did score fairly early on. I think it was around 20th minute. Rashford, an actual set piece routine. I can't remember the last time we scored a set piece routine, to be honest with you. Maybe Paul scores at Bradford. I don't know. but it was a lovely goal. Christian Eriksen into Rashford. Very simple. The Teddy Sheringham corner of old.
Exactly.
Jamie. Lovely finish.
Yeah, tremendous finish. I just thought the whole goal itself, everything from the dummy run from Varane, the Martial holding the defender in place at the front post, the pass from Eriksen, the finish from Rashford, everything was excellent. As you said, it was really nice to see a goal like that that's clearly been worked on in the training ground a lot actually come to fruition in a game. It just seemed as though Varane just seemed to distract two or three players, where he makes half a run forward and then it's almost as if he runs into the area where Rashford's going to run into, so he changes direction and runs kind of back towards the goal. That takes two or three defenders right out the road and kind of they go with him. As I said, Martial's holding the man at the front post, not letting him move, and the run from Rashford's excellent. And that kind of finish, I think, is bloody difficult, where you can't really put your foot through it. You just have to kind of steer it in the general direction of the goal, because, you know, the whole pace of that is coming off the pass from Eriksen, which was absolutely pinpoint as well. And he just caresses it into the far corner. It's a brilliant goal. Really good finish and just well worked.
Yeah, the Martial holding thing was interesting, because it showed me a lot like what a defender's priority is at a corner, because... Yeah, he's holding his man, but his man has zero intention of going anywhere, because holding Martial.
He's not even bothered about going
to that space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it just shows the priority of where they're at. The man is, I'm gonna make sure my man stops running, but I'm not even gonna bother about defending any space. And yeah, we just exploited it really well. Rashford, sixth goal in the Premier League, 11 in all competitions. Colm, is there anything better as a United fan than seeing Rashford with a smile on his face and scoring goals?
Do you know what? There's quite a lot of things about being a United fan at the moment that are quite fun. There's quite a lot of characters across the pitch that give me quite a lot of joy, which is in stark contrast to the last few years. So it's just one of many things that makes me really happy. I do kind of think this whole... All we hear now is about Rashford smiling, happy, better football, mental health. And I've never before in my life, you know, heard that much of a narrative around it. And, you know, on the one hand, it definitely is a good thing, but also it's like, can we not, you know, just, can it not constantly be about his general level of happiness and how that reflects on his football? Do you know what I mean? Like, he should just be able to play football at a certain level in a certain way. Do you know what I mean? Like, I do think the narrative's getting a little bit dominant now. Do you know what I mean? That it's all you hear, it's all anyone says in any commentary, in any halftime show, in any anything. It's just all about, you know, essentially Marcus Rashford's level of happiness with his life. Do you know what I mean? And it's all so speculative, you know. And I definitely, there's something in it at a point, you know. He definitely was down and in poor form, but like, that happens to tons of players all the time, and sometimes it is a mental thing, sometimes it's 18 other things. Do you know what I mean? So I'm kind of getting a bit fed up with that narrative. What I'm not getting fed up with is how good he's playing football. And I particularly love that Erik ten Hag seems to have really kind of picked him out for some kind of love and nurturing and development. He said after the game, you know, Something like, oh, you know, Marcus just has such a lovely smile. And you know, even he's saying it, but it does have a very wide, infectious kind of smile. And Ten Hag was sort of like, oh, you know, it's so nice. Oh, you know, I want to see him do that more. And then he also said, by the way, I think he should score 20 goals in the season, in the league, every season, basically. Which is, you know, a pretty high bar to get to and would certainly be an extremely good return for Rashford. But yeah, I mean, great goal. Literally, as Eriksen was about to take a free kick, I was watching the match with my brother, and I said, oh, here's another one of our class short corner routines that we've been doing all season. And then even as he hit the ball into the box, I was like, oh, yeah, watch this. Expecting it, obviously, to be, you know, another one that didn't really come off. But, I mean, to see stuff like that is so good, particularly after a big break where you feel like people have been working on things, or it's allowed kind of time for the more tactical sessions that they would be doing at Carrington.
So you heard it here first, everyone. Colm wants Rashford to be unhappy, miserable. As long as he's scoring goals, you don't care how happy he is.
Tell me another person where we've made such like the general media fans, other team fans, England, you know, have made such a big focus on that one person's mental health and how it pertains to their level of performance. Like, I've never seen it before, and I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
No one has a problem with Martial being miserable and scoring goals.
Well, exactly. He's just moody, you know. Like, don't worry about it. Yeah.
But yeah, and then we got a lovely goal from Rashford, and not to dwell on England, but I'm going to do a bit of England talk now because there was a lot of talk after the World Cup about how Rashford came on for Wales, came into the starting lineup for Wales, scored two goals, and then he didn't start again, and then that game against France came on for the last 10 minutes, and at the time, I was like, fair enough, like, Southgate's trying to manage the team, whatever, but the more you think about it afterwards, the more it boggles the mind that he didn't get more minutes in Qatar, and especially in that game against France, to only come on for the last 5-10 when we need a goal and he's banging form and you're bringing on Sterling instead. Bit ridiculous. So I've kind of done a 180 on that. That's my England talk done. Sorry. We would have won the World Cup, is what I'm saying, if Rashford had played a bit longer. That's what I'm saying. But anyway, yes, back to United. We scored a second quickly after. Nice two-goal solve, and that kind of was the game then. Nice for us to put it to bed quite early on. Starts with a crunching tackle from Casemiro, who was just incredible in this game. It absolutely boggles my mind that Casemiro plays football for us. I don't understand it. I don't know what he's doing here. At some point, I think he's like, he's going to wake up and realise that he's with us. But until that time, I'm very happy. Jamie, was Casemiro your man of the match?
By a mile. By an absolute mile. Best player on the pitch. And I'm kind of losing count with how many times I see that. Not even just watching us. Watching him play for Brazil in the World Cup. There was so many times you were just watching him going, he plays for us. I actually can't quite compute the fact that he still, I can't quite compute that he plays for us still, because it's so night and day watching him play for us, even for this third of a season or whatever it is, compared to the previous 5 or 6 years. And I quite like Matic, but it was just painfully obvious that Matic was past it, really, by the time he signed for us. This time we actually have a genuine world-class player in midfield who's in his prime. He's awesome, absolutely awesome. And as you said, starts it off with an absolutely crunching tackle in the left-back position, just a brilliant tackle. And it's one of those as well. It's not just a tackle where, you know, the ball goes anywhere. It's like a tackle that in the same time as he tackles the player, passes it outside to another one of our players and gets us going. And it didn't just happen in that goal. It happened all game. Stepping into the gap when he read that he would get there first. It's totally unpanicked. So many slide tackles that are just so well timed. It's not even going to be, you know, one of these potentially dodgy collisions with a player where, you know, you might get a booking or a red card. Everything's measured, controlled. Just dictates everything in midfield. Like, honestly, it's unbelievable that we've went from not having that at all to we actually have the best one in the world playing for us, doing it every single game. It's just class to watch him, it really is.
Yeah, we've gone from not having one to genuinely a world-class article. Colm, has he surprised you at all? I know a lot of people were saying, oh, he's a destroyer. And I thought, like, oh, come on now, he can pass a bit. But even I have been a bit surprised by how good he is on the ball.
way higher than I thought it was going to be, the quality of the passing. I mean, the pass for Fred is a wild pass. I mean, Fred is so far wide. He's nearly outside the penalty box, I think. And it's just like, it cuts through like four or five players. Like, it's De Bruyne-esque. And, you know, that was just all game in all different areas of the pitch. There was one that he received off a defender. I think it might have been Aaron Wan-Bissaka when we were getting pressed a bit. And he just kind of, on the first touch, just scooped it out to Anthony, I think. And it was just, again, a pass that you just thought that. Like, he knew he was playing that pass before he went and got the ball, which is what you want from your midfielder. And I think he's genuinely, you know, I read something this morning that said he's the best defensive midfielder in the league. And I don't know if it's just cut and dry, but he's certainly in the conversation, like top three, you know. And it's very
it's him or Rodri, isn't it?
Yeah, possibly Declan Rice, I would say. I still think he's super good and a bit underrated this year because West Ham aren't doing amazing. But certainly up there. And it's just so good. The other thing, really, I just love so much because so many of our players don't seem to be able to do this. See, when he wins a header, he headers it to someone. Like, even if it's a difficult position, yeah, even if it's a contested absolutely. Header, even if the ball's flying at him, he will pick out someone with his header. It'll go to Shaw or it'll be played somewhere. So many times, particularly Harry Maguire, I just see these headers, and Scott McTominay's another one wins a lot of headers, doesn't necessarily direct them. You know, they're just getting headed up or out or away or down the pitch. And it's so, you're essentially just adding to the scrappiness of the game and more often than not giving the ball back. And every, even in a difficult, you know, kind of pressured situation, he's always finding a man. He's always calming things down and slowing it down when it needs done. And I'm really surprised. The question I asked my brother and I were talking about last night after the match was, how long do you think this goes for? Like, I think he'll be, I don't see a big drop off next year. You know, I don't see that being, you know, off a cliff face. I think possibly the year after that you're pushing it, but like, he looks in supreme form and fitness.
I think we'll get a good solid 2 or 3 years out of him. Yeah, obviously, so at some point he will dip because, you know, age and shit. But I think like we'll get our money's worth out of him. I mean, we already are getting it anyway. And I think if we give it a 2 or 3 season, you can't really argue because he is literally a one man midfield at times, and it's a joy to watch. Just to round off that goal, I mean, there's a lot of good things about the goal actually, from the tackle to Bruno's pass to Rashford, who first touch immaculate. Chop inside, brilliant. Just a quick thing on Rashford. I don't think in our team there is a person who is better against lesser opposition than Marcus Rashford. Not to say he's not good against top opposition too, because he is. But when the poorer teams come around, Rashford really ups his game. Like, he shows the level of difference between him and them. And he did it against Burnley as well. There's a massive chasm between him and them, and he really flaunts it, and it's good to see. But anyway, pass it to Martial. Goal, absolutely terrible keeping, and I'm calm as our resident goalkeeping expert. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, did you hear Alan Shearer trying to say, like, oh, it was a really good strike, or it wasn't the keeper's fault? I mean,
yeah.
Like, what on earth bizarre. Was he talking about? I mean, honestly, I think potentially every other goalkeeper in the football English pyramid saves that. It's awful. It is really awful. And there was the whole thing, he was stepping to the left. I didn't really see that, to be honest. I just saw a very mediocre strike, very close. He could have stuck a leg out and saved it. It was like within a meter of him, if you know what I mean. So I think that's almost his issue, is he's trying to go down with his hands, although I still think he should be able to get there and put it away. And hold it. Like, it's just bad. I mean, he's had a bad month or two, you know. He actually played pretty well after that. He made some good saves. You know, the one from Anthony isn't a bad save. He had, I think, another one from Rashford, maybe. But, I mean, to me, that's... I didn't think Martial should take it first time. It's a decent effort, but I don't think it's the best thing he could have done in that situation, if you know what I mean. And certainly when he did it, he didn't get a great connection, didn't get into the corner. But it was a lovely move. It was a great goal in the end. But I mean, you have to look at the keeper. Like, that should be saved like 99 times out of 100.
The term poppadom wrist comes to mind. As the alternative Man United commentary guy says. It was honest. Man. It was shocking. It was so bad. Like, if I'm playing 7-a-side and somebody concedes that, you are fuming.
Yeah, you're disappointed. Yeah.
Well, not if you're Alan Shearer. We'll take a quick break now, and then when we come back, we'll talk about strikers for a little bit, and then we'll round off this game.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back. So yeah, Martial started up front. He is our number one striker at the moment. He's probably our number two, number three, number four striker, because he's our only striker. I mean, we have Rashford to come in there as well, but really we all want him on the left. So it's a bit of a dearth up there. How do you feel Martial did in this game, Jamie? Are you feeling confident about half season with just Martial at the moment?
I wouldn't go that far. I thought he played okay last night. We are so much better having him up front than what we did with Ronaldo. I will say that we're so much more fluid and we can bring a lot more players into the team, into play rather, is what I meant to say, and we do benefit from that. Sometimes you just want to see him a little bit more involved around the box, because there was two or three times just towards half time last night in particular where he goes wide, receives the ball from Anthony, plays a 1-2, kind of goes back towards the edge of the box and then stays out wide with the players and just things like that. You're like, just move back into the box a little bit, just kind of give us that presence in there. But he did have the chance second half. I think it was between Anthony's and Rashford's, because Hennessy did make two or three good saves, as Combs alluded to, and so he could have easily had a second goal. Had some good passes in him as well. And I think just coming off with whatever it was, half an hour, 25 minutes to left, is Ten Hag just being sensible and just managing his fitness at this point, because it's been a wretched first half of the season with regards to injuries for him. So hopefully he can stay fit, but that really is the problem, isn't it? You can't hang your hat on him being available for even, I would say, 3 months of the running. I may be wrong and he might play the rest of the season, but looking at his track record, looking at the first half of the season, it's just numerous muscle injuries. There's just too many, and I think we do have the squad now to really make an assault on the top four. Probably look at getting it to at least one final, I suppose, in the trophies that we're still in. But again, you're hanging your hat on him being available, being fit, and playing like he did last night, and better than that, to really get us going. And I'm not sure that's something we can rely on at the moment.
Yeah, it's a bit of a worry. I would say I'm quite worried about it. One player we won't be signing is obviously Cody Gakpo. He has now gone to Liverpool, or will be going to Liverpool. Cole, are you bothered by that news? Or are you just whatever, I mean, as long as we get a striker?
I will be bothered if he turns out to be class. At the moment, I have no idea if he will be or not, so it's hard for me to get bothered. I think it's a bit odd that, you know, we clearly had interest in the summer. It didn't materialise just due to timings and not being able to get rid of Ronaldo, I think. He shares Eric Ten Hag's agent. Eric Ten Hag's just come from that league, so they'll probably, you know of each other at the very least. You know, he kind of flirted with us a bit in a few interviews, and it seemed like we were resuming that interest here going into January following a very good World Cup showing for him, and I think a very average and underwhelming Netherlands team. And then, like, you know, yesterday happens and Liverpool sign him. So that's cool. It's a bit weird. I think he's a left winger, not a striker. So that part of it makes me not that unhappy. I want an out-and-out striker. You know, if you were getting him as a stopgap striker and ultimately wanting him as a left winger down the line, that's not a bad thing. But we are pretty stacked in that position. So it's not the worst thing in the world. It's just that there's so few other options out there that you kind of feel like you have missed one of the affordable ones. The price seems extremely good. You know, it's just a snip more than we got Donny for, you know, which, you know, seems like pittance really in this market. But I also think Liverpool's approach is a bit odd these days, you know, since there's been changes in their hierarchy and how they go about buying players. And I think they're very much committed to spending certain amounts of money and getting certain deals done when they can. You know, like us, I think they're, you know, potentially going through a sale, and then you wonder where and when the money is coming. So I think they maybe just went with a bit of urgency and felt that they had to get this one done now, although I don't think they need a left winger very much either. So it'll be interesting. I'm keen to see him play. Hopefully we won't regret it. It's a little odd. I'd like to know more about what went on, how interested we actually were, how much we were pushing the envelope, or whether we were sat on our heels, or whether in fact we decided, you know what, we're just not really sure we need this guy right now, and therefore he's went with the firmer interest. But I'd like to know the actual truth of the matter, as opposed to the kind of the instant speculation is, oh, United are so bad at this, and that could absolutely be the truth, but it just, you know, it obviously doesn't read great on the facts that we have available at the moment. But I'm happy to wait and see what the crack is really at the when the dust settles.
Yeah, as always with these things, it's very much a wait and see kind of thing. If we finish the January window without bringing anyone in out, I will be disappointed. I know you will be, Jamie, as our resident Muppet. If we don't make at least 5 signings every 3 weeks, you'll be upset. But I'm sure you're just hoping for one. We've had, well, it's been, the words coming out of the club are that it's going to be a stopgap, a loan, as opposed to buying someone permanently because of funds available and the fact that we spent loads in the summer. That's what a lot of people are reporting. Kind of would make sense, I guess, with the sale as well and the fact that Glazers are a bit tight. So with that in mind, Jamie, who would you actually, are there anybody on your Muppet list who you'd like to see come in? What do you see happening in the next few weeks?
I think it will be a stopgap signing, and I think it probably will be a loan signing, just because I think the uncertainty around the club with regards to the potential sale, potential investment having to come in, the money that was outlaid for players in summer clearly seems to be having an effect. And this is my rational self talking, where yeah, I could see just one player coming in as a stopgap up front, and that could be somebody like the name that keeps coming up even through the World Cup and even as recent as this morning is João Felix from Madrid, because it seems like there is a very clear issue between Felix and Simeone at Atletico Madrid, and Atletico Madrid are going to stick with Simeone. Obviously they've got loyalty to him for what he's done for the club, for what he's made them in the last 10 years, and Felix doesn't seem to be what he wants up front. That's why he's constantly on the bench, that's why he's constantly not playing through the middle up front. He's maybe only playing every so often there, which is why he's looking for the move. But I think the stumbling block there would be not just the loan fee, which is rumoured to be about 6 or 7 million. Madrid are then wanting whoever takes him on loan to pay his full wages, and obviously I can't even remember what it is off the top of my head, but the eventual amount would be another 6 or 7 million. So then you're potentially looking at a loan signing for 5 months, 6 months that ends up costing you 12 or 13 million pounds. And I'm not sure the club would outlay for that. The other name that I've seen is Depay.
I think he's the one who's going to come in. Yeah, I have a sneaky feeling it's going to be Depay.
I'm torn, though. I'm really torn over, is that real? And we are actually interested, because 2 or 3 weeks ago, the name that the club he was being linked with was Newcastle, because Newcastle are looking to make a bit of a statement signing in January and kind of push forward for the top four. And they know themselves with the likes of Wilson, who is a good player but just can't stay fit. And we'll see how Almiron does if he keeps going on this absolutely unbelievable streak of form if he keeps it up. But I think Newcastle feel they need more support up front, so they've been linked with Depay. So I don't know if our names come in suddenly just to make Newcastle kind of go for it and take him on a free in January, or if we are interested. The Muppet in me wants to see, as you said, 3-4 signings in January, but it's not possible. I mean, I would sign the boy from Benfica. Yeah. The one who scored a hat trick for Portugal. I was really impressed with him, and I just thought when he was playing, I just thought Portugal aren't really. After that game, he scores a hat trick, and then play him again in the following game against, I think it was Morocco. They didn't give him any service. There was no real chances they were trying to help make for him, and he seems like a proper striker, and I would be willing to take a punt on him, because again, just watching the game last night and watching his other points this season, we play such good football, we make so many chances, but we need a forward, we need a number nine. Just quickly on Gakpo, I went from really disappointed to not getting him, but then I watched him being of a Rangers affinity, I watched him against Rangers for PSV twice. Wasn't that impressed, really, in those games. And then watched him for Holland, and while for the Netherlands, and while he scored and played well at times, other times I just thought, you're a bit lightweight, mate. You don't really. He's a big, tall guy, but doesn't really use his physicality at all. Doesn't really seem like he's a forward. He's a right-footed left-sided player. And my God, we've already got however many of them. So I went from, I'm disappointed, to actually, no, I'm not that. I'm not as disappointed. And I'm confused as why Liverpool have bought him. Because they've got so many of that player as well. That I'm like, Liverpool must be planning to sell or let go Firmino, Jota, whoever. Because they're buying another player that they've already got in that position. So even as Colm says, some of the headlines are already doing the rounds, we've been gazumped for, whoever. I'm not so sure about that, because as much as Ten Hag might have wanted them, we've already got loads of players like that. We would need to start selling some players, and he isn't what we need, in my opinion, at the moment. We need a forward. And as much as he might have helped, I really don't think he's the striker that we would have needed.
Mm. And that's transfer window done. We can never talk about transfers again. It's over. Right. Back to the game, actually. And one thing you did touch upon was our... One thing we did touch upon was our lack of quality in front of goal. And we did spurn a few chances in the second half. We do need to be more clinical. That was a big talk point after the game. Ten Hag said, so we need to be more clinical. Colm, do you think it'll happen just as if we just keep creating the chances, it won't be a problem? Or do you worry that we don't have the personnel to be more clinical?
I mean, we definitely don't have like a clinical out-and-out striker, but what we do have is goals from lots of different places, hopefully now moving forward, which is good. You know, I mean, Anthony missed an extremely, I think, easy chance. I think he goes to the wrong side of the net entirely, and gives Hennessy more of a chance, which was a shame. And then there was a few misses after that. You know, none of our strikers are prolific whatsoever. However, the chance creation now seems very good. Very good. So I'm not too concerned. I mean, that I think we will kind of live and die on putting away chances in terms of the rest of this season and how we fare. But I also think that's an interesting test that needs to be played out. Do you know what I mean? I think, you know, there's no obvious signing in January, you know, maybe João Felix is the one that stands out. I also question whether we really need a false nine of his ilk, although he's the kind of player you probably just take because he's top quality. But it's not like, if you were making a player, he's not the player you'd make. Do you know what I mean? Even then in the summer, it's quite difficult. I appreciate I've just launched straight back into transfers, but it's part of the answer. Even in the summer, it's not clear who you're going for, who that player is in world football. You know, there's a bit of a doubt about that. So I'm more than happy, hopefully, to get a body in January, though I really think the club's going to struggle to find anyone kind of remotely suitable that will make any kind of positive impact, because there's no point getting someone who's going to be useless if you stick them on. Otherwise, you may as well just play McNeil or someone. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that really there is a level below which you just probably shouldn't bother. However, what I am kind of happy enough with is that I think it gives our front players enough time to stake claims, essentially, and to kind of put it out the table. And that's for the like of Anthony. That's absolutely for Martial. That's for Bruno, who needs to come back in with more goals, even though he is playing well. That is for Rashford to carry on his prime form. And then you have Jadon Sancho, Garnacho, and players like that. So there's enough there that you just need some of them to step up, take the chances. And, you know, if it's always Rashford, it's always Rashford. And then you find your answer. Do you know what I mean? Not to say he should be our number nine, but you're gonna find out in the rest of the season, because they are all going to get minutes, you know, who's reliable, who is good, who can handle it. So I think that'll be good for all those players. And I think a lot of those players, you know, particularly the likes of your Rashfords, your Martials, and your Sanchos, you kind of need to know, because we can't really, less OG and Sancho, he's a total debate on his own, you know, at the moment with regards to what is happening with his Manchester United career. But you need to know at a certain point, do you know what I mean? Like, are you going to be a player for us? Can you be relied on? Are you going to put up the numbers that a consistently top four challenging Champions League team needs, and that kind of productivity? And if you're not, then yeah, okay, maybe we are going to go and sign other players in those positions, because you've been proven to kind of not do it. So I just don't really see who the person is who's going to fix that problem for us. I'm quite happy just to let the players that we have, you know, free reign. We're playing a very creative, fluid system, so there shouldn't be any excuses. You know, there will be chances, as there was yesterday. Yesterday, enough of them were taken, and, you know, Fred comes on to put the icing on the cake, which is fine. The other misses were frustrating, but I think on other days they go fine. You know, it's not like someone missed 4, 5, 6 chances. Everyone kind of missed one, which is fine. We'll see how it goes. But, I mean, the base of the team, the midfield, and, like, that team, the sort of front six, I was like, this is so good. This is a good, proper good team, you know? So I'm kind of happy with what it is, and I just want to see how those players then go and do.
I think the big lesson from the game for me was, if you want a job done right, bring Fred on. He'll do it. He'll do it for you. He was sat on the bench thinking, I can score that. He did.
The great thing about that is, if we get our squad fit now, the likes of Fred McTominay are impact players, as they always should have been. Now, that's probably a wee bit harsh on Fred. He can start some games if we ever want to give Eriksen a rest. By the way, the amount of minutes, I think he's played more than anyone possibly outside of De Gea, is Eriksen. Which is crazy.
He's got two hearts now, hasn't he? So.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I never would have thought that's what would happen. However, you know, our starting 11 is quite good now. It's quite nailed on. And that means that there is depth elsewhere. You know, we're probably lacking depth at fullback, fair enough, particularly at right back. And we're probably lacking depth, obviously, at striker explicitly, even though we have quite a lot of cover on the wings. But everywhere else, you know, players who were meant to be squad players now are squad players, and that's good. You know, Fred should be coming on for a 30-minute cameo and starting the odd game. McTominay likewise, and that will see good out of those players. You know, Fred came on and was doing wonderfully. See, as we outside of the boot pass into the box kind of thing, after he scored his goal. I mean, it was magical. Yeah.
We're gonna take another quick break now, and then when we come back, we will do any of the business, and then we've also got a game.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the final part of United Hour. So, quick round of any of our businesses. Com did mention Jadon Sancho and the issues he's got. I don't want to get too much into it because we don't really know what's going on. And I think it's a bit church to wildly speculate what's going on, but we just hope he obviously gets himself sorted out and gets back with the squad and improves what he's worth. I don't know if anyone has anything further to say on that currently.
We just need Marcus Rashford to smile and teach him how to smile and be happy and then score those goals.
Yeah, that's it.
That's simple.
I wonder if
Kong just wants everyone to be miserable, as we already discussed.
I just wonder if mentally, is he all right? Purely because, you know, he's had a massive move to United. Last season wasn't very good at all. He's then found himself out of the England team, not being picked for the World Cup. He started playing okay for us. Like, obviously you want much better than that. But I still mean, even the game against Liverpool and just after that, he was playing okay and contributing and scoring. But I don't know. I just wonder if if there's a problem there, where there's too much pressure on him. And as you said,
I don't see motivation, and that can come from lots of things. It's not just that doesn't mean he's lazy or he's not bothered. It might be those things, but it can also be other things. Well, no, it might be those things. You know, it's fair enough. Some people sometimes just have a bad attitude. You know, there is usually always a reason, but sometimes it's just, you know, they've got themselves into that position. Maybe the move isn't working out how he wanted. Maybe he thinks he should be at a better club. Maybe he thinks we should be higher on the table. Maybe he thinks we should be playing better football, providing different chances for him, putting him in different positions. Maybe he's just not happy. You know, maybe a million things. Could be a very personal thing, could be anything. And he's still so young. I think he's 22, is he?
So he's still very young. As you said, you're more just hoping he's all
child.
Right.
You know, he is a child. So you just have to hope he works through it. And if he doesn't, that the club, you know, make an appropriate decision around that. I mean, someone being away from the squad, you know, I appreciate it's an odd situation where he wasn't travelling with England when he probably felt he could/should have been. Obviously, previously has very much been in the squad. And then, you know, you're kind of on your own character or whatever. But then to send him away, and it's just, it's very odd. It's very odd.
So I didn't want to wildly speculate. And then we spent a good 5 minutes wildly speculating. So that went well. I've lost all control, everybody. I've lost all control of this podcast. So we'll move on to the League Cup. We got a solid win over Burnley. I can't remember how much we won. I didn't actually watch this game, I confess. I was at a Christmas do, so there were my priorities. We won 2-0. 2-0.
Brilliant goal by Rashford. Yes. Tremendous.
Yes, brilliant goal by Rashford.
Oh, yeah, that was a good goal.
He was allowed to run the whole length of the pitch for some bizarre reason without anyone deciding to tackle him, and then he just lashed into the corner because he was smiling, and that's why he put it in the corner. So,
as he was dribbling, I think he was smiling, and that was the key. Even though he got a bit lucky with one of the dribbles, the finish was then excellent, and really that's what you want. Like, Rashford running into space is going to be a good Rashford, you know, so and smiling.
Yeah. And then we have in the next round of the cup, Charlton.
Yeah, that's right. Home, isn't it, as well?
At home. Yeah, so, a nice favourable draw given to us by Mary Earps. Don't know how Mary Earps is allowed to draw us a name out of a hat, but nice one, Mary. So, we should hopefully be looking at a League Cup semi-final and potentially a League Cup final. A trophy we should be going for that now. Now we're in these last stages, I think we really should be trying to win it. Obviously, it depends who you get in the semi-final. You get to sit in the semi-final, you go out, fair enough, but we can give them a game. So, it'd be interesting to see how that goes. Next up is Wolves, and then Bournemouth shortly afterwards. Wolves away, they've just got their new manager in charge. They drew 1-1 against Everton this weekend.
No, they beat them.
Oh, did they beat them?
Yeah, they won in the 95th minute. Oh. They scored the winner.
Well, that's what happens when you look at the 90-minute scores and think, ah, that's that game done.
Frank Lampard Frank Lampard still has a job. If he has a new job by the new year, I will be impressed.
The man has many lives and many friends in the media.
Yeah.
Wolves won, coming off the back of a win of their new manager. So there'll be a different proposition. Bad times play them. If we'd only played them before the World Cup, probably been a bit better. But I mean, games against Wolves, I just have memories of that time we played them like 4 games in a row. And it was 0-0 every single time. Yeah. And it was a nightmare. It's giving me flashbacks already. But hopefully this game won't be so bad because we're actually a decent team now, and hopefully we'll play some nice football. And hopefully they'll want to show some stuff in front of their fans. It'll be the first home game for the manager, won't it?
Yeah, that's right. It will be, yeah. Because that was his first game against Everton, yeah. So that'll be his first home game, yeah.
Yeah, so you imagine they'll be up for it. And we already had the new manager bounce with Emery, came along with Villa, which is a bit irritating. So, difficult game, but how do you see this one going, Jamie?
I kind of only caught the highlights of the Wolves game, and to be honest, I thought Everton played all right and probably should have at least had a draw at the game. Wolves created some stuff, not a great deal. the two goals were well worked, that's what I will say. Quite a good bit of craft in both goals, some good passing. And I would need to... What's the word I'm looking for? I would need to look to other people who know more about Lopetegui than me. But I do know he is a good manager. He had a kind of raw deal over the whole Real Madrid-Spain thing, but he is a good manager, and I think he is actually who they wanted when this whole thing started, where, you know, when Mendes went in, I think they wanted him back then, so they finally have got their man. I think they will be a bit more on the front foot, look to attack a bit more, but as you say, I just have so much kind of PTSD of previous Wolves games where you sit there for 90 minutes and nothing really happens. So I'm just hoping it's a decent game for a change more than anything, because these games against Wolves do tend to be quite a bit of a slog. But as you said, hopefully they're up for it and kind of go for it a little bit with the new manager there, and that would suit us and it would allow us to play a bit more of an open game.
Obviously the race for the top four is quite tight at the moment. Liverpool are right behind us, though we've got a game in hand on them. If we win that game in hand, we'll be 4 points clear. We are a point behind Spurs. Newcastle, I think we're a couple points behind Newcastle, but again, we've got games in hand over them. So it's all pretty tight at the top, and you kind of got to keep winning to just to keep pace, really. Colm, will you be disappointed with anything other than a win?
Yeah, hugely. Really hugely. I think it's a must win. I think it should be a comfortable win. I think there is a bit of the Unai Emery bad timing, bad juju about this game, I agree, which we seem to find with unerring reliability. In terms of any time a team gets sacked, you can nearly guarantee their next game is going to be against United, but I still think Wolves are kind of at the end of their cycle with that team a little bit. It's aged, it's ran out of form, it's kind of lost a little bit of its identity, and its identity was to make those games as difficult as possible to kind of really be as good in possession as we are and work extremely hard. So I'm hoping that we will take advantage. I mean, they're nearly bottom of the table, do you know what I mean? So it should be good. I think we just have enough about us defensively now and control from Casemiro and Eriksen that we should do enough. And as long as the front players do the business, I don't really see there being a huge issue. And yeah, I think, you know, I'm very lasered on the top four now, and I think I've set that as kind of like a really bare minimum goal for me at this point of the season with the team we have and how other teams are doing. You know, I don't think we should be accepting or overly forgiving of Erik ten Hag if we don't secure top four. That's not me saying he should be sacked if he doesn't get top four by any stretch of the imagination, but I think we should absolutely be holding him and the team to account with top four this year, because it should be achievable.
It's a competitive field, though, as I said. So,
yeah, but like with who? Do you know what I mean? I appreciate Newcastle are good. Do you know what I mean? Spurs are not good. Liverpool are probably the one to watch out for, alongside possibly Chelsea if they get their act together. But like, we're in prime position. You know, we have the game in hand on Spurs, who dropped points earlier in the week. Newcastle, you would hope, will fall off at some point. I appreciate they're doing extremely well. But like, I just think our team is as good as those teams, if not better.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I feel like we really should be looking at top four, and if we don't, it's a disappointment. But if we win something, I'll negate that disappointment by us actually winning something, especially if it's Europa League, then we get into the Champions League anyway. So, yeah. Jamie, are you same as Colm? Top four or disappointment?
Yeah, at this stage, definitely, because we're playing well, we have good players, we seem a bit more streetwise as well. I don't know if adding Casemiro in has brought a lot of that in, but we do seem a bit more wise to... I just thought under Ollie, for example, I just thought we could get bullied out of games, you know? And I just don't think that's the case anymore. I think we're a lot more physical, we're a lot more solid in terms of... We don't really give many chances away. I mean, the back four's fit, so hopefully soon, yeah, we're back to Shaw, Martinez, Varane, and Dalot as the back four, and with Casemiro sitting in front of them, I don't see many chances being given away against many teams. And the only thing for me is, I think two of the four of the top four are already set. I do think City, obviously, will be whatever position they're in, will finish in the top four. I also think Arsenal, because as much as they lost Jesus, I thought they were very good against West Ham the other night and have been good for most of the season. So I think they'll make the top four as well. And then, as you said, Imran, there's a lot of competition, so there's only two positions left. But really, yeah, we should be nailing down one of them.
Mm. That should start with a win against Wolves. And I know we're all a bit worried about the new manager bounce that Villa had, but luckily there won't be Anthony Taylor refereeing that game, so we won't have to have a 15-yard wall. The story this week that the referee groups admitted that he managed to place a wall wrong. Which, mm-hmm. I don't know how you place a wall wrong. I really don't. But that makes you feel better, though, doesn't it? That they got it wrong. They made it. That makes you feel better, doesn't it? About losing that game 3-1. It makes you feel all the way better. Anyway, that's enough of that. Now you're in for a treat, ladies and gentlemen, because it's not my stupid game. No. It's Jamie's stupid game.
Absolutely.
A wonderful game of football, which Manchester United have won convincingly.
But it was a breathtaking match. Absolutely brilliant.
Shocking. I am disgusted with it.
Yes, so I'm going to hand it over to our brilliant host, Jamie.
Thank you very much, Imran. Welcome, everyone. And yes, I'm going to host this edition of Imran / Jamie's Stupid Game. So, to begin, I do actually have a coin that I got when I was at the stadium tour of Old Trafford. And on one side, we have the Man United crest. And on the other side, we have a little diagram of Old Trafford column with your name beginning with C. And as it is alphabetical order, which side do you want to select for the toy and cost?
Give me the Old Trafford diagram, please.
Okay, and here we go. And it landed on the crest. So, Imran, would you like to go first or second?
As this is a penalty shootout, you should always go first.
Okay, no bother. Right. Here is the format.
Far too much World Cup.
So, 10 questions. And since you're going to go first, Imran, we'll let you go first. And at the end, if needed, we do have a tiebreaker question. So here we go. Also, just to add, if you do get the question wrong, I will pass over to the other player to see if they can get it right and get the point. So here we go. Imran, question one. In what year was the club, known as Newton Heath LYR, believed to have been established?
1887?
That's very, very close. Colm, do you want to advance on that?
Oh, okay, so it's close. 1880?
Ooh, I'm afraid you're both wrong. It's 1878. You just got it the wrong way around, Imran.
Yeah, I did. Damn it.
Oh, very close. Right,
closest wins the point, though? Or no?
No. We're ruthless here. No.
Is it now the time to announce my dyslexia?
Right. Colm, question two. What did the LYR stand for, referring to the industry from which the club existed?
I know it's a train thing. The railway. Lancashire Railway. Yeah, Lancashire and Yorkshire Railway.
Well done.
Yes.
1 point to Colm.
I was going to end up with York. Lancashire and York.
Thank God. Good shout. Right, Imran. The Man United manager's role, taken up in 1945, was Matt Busby's third in management, having already managed City and Liverpool. Is that true or is it false?
That is false.
Well done. That was his first managerial appointment at Man United, yeah. And he actually only played for City and for Liverpool. So well done, Imran. That's one each so far. Colm, what was significant about the first home game of the 1949-50 season when Man United beat Bolton 3-0 at home?
1949-50? I have no idea. I have no clue.
Imran, do you want to take a punt at that?
First game at Old Trafford?
I'll give you that. It was the first game back at Old Trafford since the end of World War II.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I was going to say something about a war ending. God.
Yeah. Ooh, he's turned it round. He's turned it round, ladies and gentlemen. Pressure's back on you now, Colm. How old is it? No, it's Imran, beg your pardon. Imran.
It's me, yeah, come on.
How old was George Best when he made his debut in 1963?
17.
Oof. He's on fire. 17 indeed. Right, Colm, you need this one.
Yeah.
And for this, I will accept either the club or the player. The first ever goal in the Premier League era was scored against Man United. Can you tell me the player or the club?
Was it Sheffield Wednesday?
I'm going to have to pass over to Imran. Can you get it?
It's Brian Deane and Sheffield United.
Oh, well done.
A game I was at, by the way.
Yeah. You were at that game?
How old are you?
Yeah, the game I was at. In wow. The, I would have been six? Five, six? I was actually in the Sheffield United end as well.
Wow.
In a full that. United kit.
That was going to beat up a six-year-old.
No way. Right, pressure really is on, because by my count, that's 4-1 to Imran.
Yeah.
Right, back over to you, Imran. Which player became the most expensive in British football history when he signed for United in July 1993?
Roy Keane.
Yeah, it was Roy Keane. Well done.
I mean, Imran's getting a lot easier questions here, I feel. But he's also
correctly
answering my questions, to be fair. But, you know... I also absolutely give him the assist on Sheffield Wednesday, although given he was there, it seems like he knew that one. But
I did know that one, yeah.
Right, I think you'll get this one though, Colm. Which United youngster moved to Newcastle in a part exchange when United signed Andy Cole?
I don't know, I have no idea.
Come on, Colm, you know this.
I mean, come on, I feel like I will know it as soon as you say it, yeah? No, I haven't got a clue, I don't know. I feel like I'm going to know as soon as you say it.
I'm going to have to pass to him, Rant.
Keith Gillespie.
Yes, it was Keith Gillespie.
Oh, that's so bad for me. Oh, Keith.
Keith, poor Keith.
Keith.
Well, he's 5-1 in front, so that's it as far as it goes, but let's just finish it off. So, Imran, United began the 1998-99...
Is he not 6-1
as well? 6-1, beg your pardon. Yes, you're right, Colm. I was trying to help you out there, but yeah, if you want to get beat by another one, that's fine. Yes, so, Imran. United began the 1998-1999 season at home to Leicester City. Beckham dramatically scored in stoppage time to secure the 2-2 draw. But can you tell me which player had earlier half the deficit?
Leicester City. Nicky Butt?
I'll need to pass the call.
Dwight York?
It was Teddy Sheringham.
Did he score from a corner where we led it back to the edge of the box?
No, actually it was a set piece. I remember it was Beckham... put a cross in, and I actually thought Beckham scored initially, but it took a slight one of those, you know, Chicharito style headers from Sheringham into the far corner. Right, to finish us off, Colm, a vital 4-2 win at Everton in the 06-07 season helped move United closer to the league title. In that game, we had an own goal from Phil Neville, John O'Shea and Wayne Rooney put United 3-2 up. Can you tell me who scored the fourth? Yeah.
It's a youngster, Colm.
Yeah, it's a youngster. Player. Yeah.
A young player at that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, at that time.
I'm going to get my years mixed up. Was it Ronaldo?
No, I'll give it over to Imran. Can you get it?
Yeah, it's Chris Eagles.
Yes, it was indeed Chris Eagles.
Oh, you know this? My goodness. That's obscure.
I remember that. I remember that game. We were losing 2-0 and then we won 4-2.
I also remember the guy that scored the second goal for Everton was Fernandes, and it was an absolute howitzer of a goal that he scored.
It was a very good goal.
And then, was Ronaldo at the club? He was, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah,
he was. It was one of those games where it was like, if we don't win this, we'll probably... At the beginning of that game, we were on course to win the league, and then we were losing, and then I think Chelsea were winning at the same time. So
yeah,
we were going to be basically dislodged, and then we turned it around, and they ended up drawing or losing, so
yeah,
we basically won the
Bolton
league.
The same day we won that game, and ended up... That helped us win the league, really. Right, so well done, Imran. That's 7-1. I have a tiebreaker. Do you want to do the tiebreaker? See who gets it?
Yeah.
Go on.
Okay, so I'll go with Imran since he won, but I'll take a guess from each of you. How many goals did Dennis Law score in his time at Man United? And I'll take closest one.
I mean, it's a bit unfair that I have to go first because Colin's just going to go one up. I
had no clue when Newton Heath had just literally subtracted numbers.
So how many goals did Dennis Law score?
Yeah.
For United?
For United, yeah.
197.
What are you going to go, Colm?
I don't think it's that many. I'll go for 196 then.
Imran's closest. He actually scored 237 goals in 449 games at Man United, which, if you're not watching Ronaldo or Messi, is a remarkable kind of return.
That's wild. So, that's a huge number.
That is wild. There you go.
So yeah, that was my edition of Imran's stupid game. You can let us know how you've got on with those questions. And depending
on good questions. Yeah, they were tough, but good questions. It was handy that Imran was personally at every single game and event that you made there.
Yeah, I was. This is how I should. Chris Eagles is actually my cousin. I should.
Dreadful. Dumb and dumber, I'd call him. I thought they were really poor. Thought they were a joke. Really abysmal.
Just before we go, this episode was brought to you by footballprizes.co.uk. Yes, our thanks to our sponsors at Football Prizes. They a great place where you can bid on all sorts of things and win all sorts of great prizes, signed memorabilia for sports, including United stuff, other stuff. It's all there. Use the discount code UH10, gets you 10% off anything on the site. It really helps support us and everything we do at the podcast. So please get to footballprizes.co.uk and start bidding. Great. I did that. First time, everybody. First time. You'll never know it. That's it from us. We'll probably be back, probably not after the Wolves game, probably after the Bournemouth game, after New Year's. From everyone at United Hour, have a happy new year, and we'll see you in 2023. I hope it's a great new year for you all. Say happy new year, you too.
Happy new year.
Happy new year, troops.
My bathwater's getting absolutely freezing here.
United Hour is part of the Sports Social Network, edited by Imran Lahair. And our theme song is by Ancient Feelings. To get in touch, please follow us on Twitter, United_Hour, or email us at unitedhour@gmail.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.